Congressman Blatnick, it is a real pleasure to welcome a freshman congressman like yourself to the ranks of the pro-Roosevelt group in Congress. I want to congratulate you on your appointment as one of the Democratic floor lieutenants. Mr. McCormick, our leader, is to be congratulated also for his wise choice. Your new assignment means you will be taking the lead in the House debate. It is a tough job, but from what I have seen of you and know of you, I am certain that you will do justice to this position of leadership.
Well, I thank you, Congressman Sabbath. I am very happy to be in such distinguished company, and it is a real pleasure and an honor to discuss political problems with you, who have been a leader in the fight for the Roosevelt program for these many years.
In our discussions of political problems, Mr. Blatnick, I would like to start out by asking you what current problems facing the Congress do you consider the most important?
It is a little difficult to say which problem is the most vital, as there are a number of important ones. For example, there is the housing shortage, the lack of adequate medical facilities, need for extending the coverage of the Social Security Act, old age pensions, the need for more liberal credit facilities for small businessmen, the stabilization of farm prices, rent control, and the rising cost of living. So you cannot place any priority on any one of these problems, as they all relate to the public welfare.
You have placed the rising living costs and rent control high on the list, Mr. Blatnick, and I am of the belief that this problem is of the utmost importance as far as the average citizen is concerned.
You are probably right, Mr. Sabbath. The ever-increasing costs of the necessities of life hit the people right in the pocketbook and tend to undermine their standards of living.
I am certain of one thing, Mr. Blatnick, and that is that every man, woman, and child in America is feeling the pinch of the inflation that is sweeping America. The situation regarding living costs is becoming most critical. According to the February 25th report of Dun & Bradstreet, the prices of food and other consumers' goods are at the highest point in American history. The cost of living has nearly doubled since 41. This means that the consumer dollar will buy only about half as much in goods today as it would 6 years ago. The cost of food alone has increased over 50% during the last 8 months and is still increasing. This inflationary spiral has a lot of us worried.
Mr. Sabbath, I understand that you are trying to do something about this sad state of affairs. Would you like to say something about your proposal?
Yes. I have introduced the House resolution authorizing the House Committee on Agriculture to make a complete investigation of the basic causes in this rise in the cost of foodstuffs and make recommendations for appropriate actions on the part of Congress. I feel that we should get at the bottom of things, discover the facts, and hold responsible those who have helped to bring about and are responsible for this situation.
Well, I am most certainly in favor of such an investigation, Congressman Sabbath, and you can be assured of my full support with respect to your resolution. I do not think you will have to look very far, however, to discover what groups are responsible for the inflation we are experiencing. In my opinion, the National Association of Manufacturers and other selfish lobby groups who help destroy the government's price control program have done more than anything else to bring about this inflationary spiral.
That is true, Mr. Blatnick. The selfish groups who have placed profits above the general welfare are to blame for this inflation. Now, because of pressure from these same vicious lobbyists, the House, by its vote on Tuesday, practically wiped out rent control and the last of OPA by refusing appropriation, while the fight goes on to repeal all control powers outright and directly. Again, the welfare of the people is being sacrificed for profit. It makes no difference to them that with prices decontrolled. Bread is going up 3 cents a loaf, just as everything else went up. The contractors lobby and the real estate lobby said if controls were taken off, they would build plenty of medium-priced homes to take care of our veterans. Where are these homes? I asked. Just about everything they asked for was given them by the Republicans, but they failed miserably in their promises. They put up prices, but they didn't put up houses. You can be sure I'm going to continue in my fight against the Republicans and their profiteering masters, and allies who have been so reckless in their promises and so indifferent to the needs of the masses. Rent control should have been continued. For just how long, of course, I don't know.
Well, I think the answer to how long rent controls should be maintained depends upon how soon the present housing shortage is eliminated. Now, rent levels are determined by the laws of demand and supply in the same way as are the prices of all other commodities. The demand for housing units today far exceeds the current housing supply. And if we take away rent controls and allow demand and supply to operate, rents will inevitably go sky high.
That is sound economics, Mr. Blatnick. The rent control problem is linked directly to the housing shortage. At the present time, there are over 3 million families living doubled up with other families in houses and apartments. In other words, the demand for houses now exceeds the current supply by 3 million dwelling units. Until enough homes are built whereby demand catches up with the supply, the only means at our disposal to protect the tenants from higher rents is to continue rent control.
The only alternative to an extension of rent controls is higher and higher rents. Now, you spoke about the high cost of living a few minutes ago, Mr. Savitz. It seems to me that a rent hike of this time would have the effect of giving the present inflationary trends a shot in the arm, and we would experience a still higher food and clothing prices, as well as a rent increase. On the other hand, the maintenance of rent controls is necessary to slow down inflation in general.
That is one good reason why we must continue to control rent. But there are other good reasons also. The extension of rent control is necessary to safeguard the purchasing power of the consumer. It is a well-established economic truth that business, prosperity, and full employment depends upon the maintenance of abundant purchasing power in the hands of the consuming population. You will remember that President Truman stressed this idea in his economic report to Congress. Now, if we let rent go up, the reserve of consumer purchasing power will be sharply cut.
That is right, Mr. Savitz. A 10% increase in rent has the effect of reducing the real wages of the worker by 3%. A rent hike of 15% will add 3/4 of $1 billion to the nation's rent bill. Now, in my humble opinion, such a cut in consumer purchasing power undermines business prosperity and is paving the way to depression and unemployment.
I would like to point out that an increase in rent will have a detrimental effect upon the industrial relations also. At the present time, wage negotiations are taking place in many of our basic industries. If rents go up, labor will seek higher wages to offset the decrease in their real wages. Thus, current negotiations between management and labor will be upset, and more labor unrest and industrial strife will result.
And we must not forget that the elimination of rent controls means that the veteran is given a dirty deal. The average veteran cannot pay more than $40 per month for rent. Now, if rents are allowed to go up, then decent housing will be placed out of reach of the average veteran's pocketbook. Some of our Republican colleagues love to talk about what they are going to do for the veteran. If they were sincere, they would be willing to protect the veteran's family from rising rent. Surely, men who fought for the country have a right to expect decent housing at a reasonable rental.
Fair words are cheap, Congressman Blatney, as you have no doubt discovered since coming to Congress. The enemies of rent control prefer to ignore the facts about this question. Instead, they seek to justify their position by advancing arguments which have no validity.
I think this argument that existing rent controls are working great hardship on landlords is a good example of this kind of faulty reasoning. The opposition claims that increased operating costs are so high that it is impossible for the landlord to break even if the rent line is held at present levels. But the facts show otherwise. According to a recent survey, the income of apartment owners was 28% higher in 1946 than it was in 1939, and rental income from small structures is up by 43%.
Do not forget, John, that the vacancy loss of landlords is almost nil at the present time, and what very few repairs have been made in recent years, there can be no doubt that 80% or more of landlords are making more money today than ever before. Of course, in some individual cases, rent controls may work hardship on landlords. But at least, as I say, 80% of landlords are making profits and making money.
And the OPA law allows for rent adjustments to take care of these cases, Mr. Sabbath. If a landlord can show that the rent regulations are working a hardship in his case, he can petition OPA for a rent increase. The OPA has leaned over backwards to give relief to landlords who need it, having granted 58% of all petitions for rent increases. Furthermore, the OPA recently liberalized their procedures whereby landlords can get more relief.
We are both agreed that the granting of relief to landlords in hardship cases is just and proper. But I do not see how anyone can justify a general rent increase on the grounds that a small percentage of landlords may need rent adjustment. All such hardship cases can be handled through and have been handled easily through administrative action.
It is a pretty weak argument. There is, however, a still weaker one. The enemies of rent control are now trying to tell us that existing rent controls are responsible for the current housing shortage. They claim that if we would let rents go up, then the building industry would be stimulated, and soon we would have more than enough houses, which would cause rents to come down. It seems to me that those who argue this way are really placing the cart before the horse. Instead of existing rent controls being responsible for the housing shortage, it was the abolition of price ceilings and the priority system on building materials which has made it difficult to build more homes. Most recently, the relaxing of these controls prevented the Veterans Emergency Housing Program from realizing its goal of 1.2 million new housing units last year.
Mr. Blatney, this argument that the elimination of all controls is necessary to encourage production, which would in turn force prices down, is a very old one and has been used before. During the debates on price control last summer, the National Association of Manufacturers claimed that if price controls were only removed, then production would increase, the market would be flooded with goods, and prices would be forced down. But what happened when food, clothing, and other consumers' goods were decontrolled? You know the answer. The cost of living is over 50% higher today than it was 8 months ago, and it is still rising. The elimination of all controls has not meant more goods and lower prices, but only higher prices. Now the lobby groups are telling us that if we remove rent controls, then more houses will be built and rents will come down, but we know from experience that the end of rent control will only mean much higher rent.
Which means, Mr. Sabbath, that we have got to make a fight in Congress to save rent controls in order to protect the living standards of the 50 million people who are living in rented dwellings. Just what do you think are the chances of passing the Murray-Wagner bill, which would extend the present rent control bill for another year?
That is a hard question to answer, Mr. Burton, but I fear that our chances are not good. The enemies of rent control are attacking on two fronts. On one hand, they are attempting to abolish the OPA completely and thus kill rent control directly. On the other hand, the same people are attempting to cut the appropriation of OPA and thus destroy by indirect methods all rent controls as well as sugar controls on April the 30th. Behind the anti-rent control congressmen are certain real estate lobbyists who purchase apartment houses in bankruptcy at 15 cents on the dollar during the Depression and who are now out to make a killing. Most certainly, the average landlord is not against rent control. A recent poll showed that the two-thirds of all the owners of rental properties favored continued rent control. Anyway, when the rent control bill reaches the floor of the House, I will be doing my best to save rent control.
Now, I'll be fighting right alongside of you, Mr. Sabbath. I want to thank you for the opportunity to appear in this radio program with you. Your record as a great liberal, as a champion and firm supporter of the Roosevelt program is most inspiring to your younger colleagues. It is indeed a great honor to work with you.